Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Legislation. Texas GOP labels Landgraf waste solution bad bill, by Stuart Doreen. The Republican Party of Texas called Brooks Landgraf's radioactive waste bill, House Bill 2692, a bad bill on its official party Twitter account. The party added to those who have objected to the passage of the bill that includes State Representatives Tom Craddock of Midland and Tommy Taylor of Fasken Oil and Ranch. Landgraf of Odessa co-authored the bill that would ban the storage and disposal of high-level nuclear waste away from civilian nuclear power plants or university research reactors in Texas. A proposal from waste control specialists to expand their existing nuclear waste site in Andrews County to store high-level waste would be impacted by the bill. Craddock, earlier in the session, sent a letter to the Environmental Regulation Committee that stated the bill, quote, muddies the waters between a tax cut for a specific vendor and the issue of high-level radioactive waste storage in Texas, unquote. Taylor spoke in opposition of the bill before it was voted out of committee 6-2. The Texas Legislature online history website showed the bill was set to be placed on the general state calendar on Tuesday. The Texas GOP last week wrote the following on its Twitter page. Bad bill. HB 2692 by Brooks Landgraf removes safety guidelines to dump nuclear waste in Texas. Dumped waste no longer has to be buried in canisters, but may be spread freely. This is terrible for all communities. Call at Brooks Landgraf at 512-463-0546 and tell him HB 2692 stinks. Hashtag TXLEGE. This article is entitled Ramsey, Pieces Already in Place to Turn Midland ISD Ship Around, by Stuart Doreen. Midland ISD Superintendent Angelica Ramsey continues to meet the Midland community. On Monday, the Midland Council of PTAs were the stakeholders, and inside the First United Methodist Church, they got a glimpse of Ramsey's vision for education management. She calls it the new era of excellence in Midland. The Ramsey whirlwind of Midland continues adding more stakeholders to the hundreds she's conversed with since arriving in late February. Ramsey also said Monday she has been to every campus in the Midland ISD system, some more than once. And it is because of the conversations and close attention given to the campus setting that she said she was able to pronounce Midland ISD already has the tools to turn the ship around. She said it is her job to put the students, teachers, staff members, and stakeholders in proper position. Again, Ramsey kept everything simple. Much more than some might expect for a person coming into the district with the student achievement record that MISD shows. On Monday, she showed her path to change and collective impact. It included, any entry must be inclusive for it to be successful. Its purpose is to strategically establish a set of goals to work on while gathering information to foster a culture of excellence. Real and sustainable change must have commitment from all stakeholders. She reminded those in attendance, her strategy is for the long term, and therefore the community can come up with answers that are more than band-aids. She also provided her five goals of the entry plan that she said entirely are about student achievement. They are: establish a collaborative and positive working relationship with the board and superintendent to ensure a cohesive governance team. Create a proposal for accelerating student achievement. establish public trust and confidence through open, honest communication and positive relationships about stakeholder groups. Increase organizational effectiveness and efficiency with high accountability standards. Establish a clear and definitive strategy to address issues related to school safety, security, and climate for all schools. She told the council that the plan moving forward must be more consistent from campus to campus, so success can happen even when turnover of teachers or campus leadership is high. Ramsey added the district is suffering from an implementation fatigue of programs that staff knows is just the latest and greatest, but has doubt about their staying power. She said having too many programs and initiatives has impacted the district's ability to be a smart and healthy organization. Because by year three of implementing a program on a particular campus, the turnover has been so great that the staff lacks training. Who loses in this scenario, she said. The kids do. She said the district has been plagued from a lack of standard operating procedures. Ann Dixon, the district's former interim superintendent, made comments about this during her time in Midland last fall and winter about the lack of consistency of academic programs from campus to campus. Ramsey described to those in attendance that the teachers are the number one commodity a district has when it comes to educating students. She also said the district and campus leaders need to be honest about what is working and what isn't, as the district makes long-term changes and refocuses on academic performance. This article is called Small Bites. Mother's Day Brunch Spots, plus Where to Celebrate Cinco de Mayo, by J.C. Lewis. Here is a list of the best brunch spots to celebrate Mother's Day this weekend. Many restaurants request or require that reservations be made in advance. Ranchland Hills Golf Club will have a special brunch Sunday for Mother's Day. The menu features seafood bisque, Commander's Palace shrimp and grits, chorizo chicken, almond-crusted trout, rosemary pork loin, penne chicken pasta, beef tenderloin, baked salmon, and herb-roasted turkey. Sides include loaded mashed potatoes, Brussels sprouts, chef vegetables, smoked salmon wrapped asparagus, truffle mac and cheese, and baked brie with smoked blackberry sauce. Cold selections include fresh melon and prosciutto, fruit salad, lobster salad, seasonal crisp salad, seafood display of shrimp, lobster, crab legs, and oysters. The children's menu features pizza rolls, chicken tenders, tater tots, and kids' mac and cheese. Desserts will feature seasonal tarts, triple chocolate cake, a crepe station, warm rice pudding, and more. The brunch is 10:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. Price is $32.95 for adults and $16.95 for children. Reservations are required and can be made by calling 683-2041 or emailing John Powell at jpowell@ranchlandhills.com. Alley Village Butter's brunch menu features banana bread French toast, homemade Pop-Tarts, grilled Caesar, biscuits and gravy, chicken biscuit sliders, chicken and waffles, everything avocado crostini, smoked salmon board, eggs benedict, build-your-own tacos, deviled eggs, eggs in a hole, Tex-Mex scramble, peanut butter and bacon waffles, Nutella and strawberry waffles, and blueberry waffles. The restaurant serves brunch Saturday and Sunday from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. To reserve, call 853-2625. Cork and Pig Tavern's brunch menu features Fruity Pebbles French toast, Mexican migas, ham and cheese omelette, prime rib hash, huevos rancheros, and steak and eggs. The restaurant serves brunch Saturday and Sunday, 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. To reserve a table, call 400-4121 or visit corkandpig.com/Midland. Wall Street Bar and Grill serves brunch on Sunday from 10 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. The brunch menu features eggs Benedict, eggs Florentine, eggs Point St. George, eggs Blackstone, huevos rancheros, migas, Mexican omelette, steak and eggs, and more. Bean and grapes menu features two egg plate, sweet cream pancakes, blackened shrimp benny, Texas benny, three egg omelette, spicy brunchy, and more. The restaurant serves brunch from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. The patio draft house's menu features pancakes, Belgian waffle, chicken and waffle, French toast, classic Benedict, Mexican Benedict, huevos rancheros, chilaquiles, steak and eggs, Texas omelette, veggie omelette, poblano omelette, and breakfast burritos. The restaurant serves brunch from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Beryl and Derek at the Marriott Hotel in Odessa will be having Mother's Day brunch on Saturday and Sunday. The brunch menu features house biscuits, Texas French toast, Beryl and Derek chicken and waffles, broken yolk burger, oatmeal three ways, and made-to-order omelets. Brunch will be served 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. both days. To reserve, call 580-5805. Librado will offer brunch from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. The brunch menu features classic breakfast, chicken fried steak and eggs, chicken and waffles, breakfast scramble, French toast, breakfast tacos, eggs Benedict, biscuits and gravy, and fresh baked cinnamon rolls. Pie Social is open from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday and Sunday for brunch. The menu features West Texas Sunrise Pie, Pie Lorraine, Smoky Sour Benedict, Hammer Benedict, Nutella crepes with bananas and candied pecans, the Lumberjack Platter, French toast with candied bacon and caramel drizzle, chicken and waffles, the Avo, and a fresh fruit platter. Reservations can be made at 247-1711. Dead End Food Shack's brunch menu features Dead End Lox Sandwich, ABC Frenchies, Breakfast Spinach Salad, Chorizo Hash, Little Detour, Chicken Fried Steak, Chicken and Waffles, Menudo, Breakfast Nachos, and Pork Benny. Brunch cocktails can be purchased from the Detour Bar. Open 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday and Sunday. Cinco de Mayo. Pachuco Mobile Food Company will be at the Buffalo Nickel from 4 to 9 p.m. Wednesday. The food truck will be offering beef or chicken fajitas, smoked meat tacos, Korean tacos, quesadilla with choice of smoked meat, Lucador and PB&J with jalapeno jelly. The Destination Midland will hold a Cinco de Mayo Tejano this week. On Friday, Guapo Seo will play with a $10 cover. Saturday, Elencia will perform with a $10 cover before 9 p.m. and a $15 cover after 9 p.m. The event will have a fajita and rib cook-off from 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday at 1705 West Industrial Avenue. Food Truck Alley will be hosting a fiesta Saturday to celebrate Cinco de Mayo. There will be a DJ, ballet folk rockico, mariachi, and more. The event is free from 5 to 8 p.m. at 3818 West Wall Street. Abuelo's Mexican Restaurant will have a $5 drink specials on Cinco de Mayo, including La Grandeza Margarita, Sangria Rocks, and a 22-ounce Grande Mexican draft beer. Chili's Grill and Bar is offering $5 deals on margaritas, frozen roes, and draft imports on Wednesday. This article is entitled, Thai Vote Denies Betonbow Plans for Smaller Housing Lots, by Mella McEwen. Plans to offer smaller homes on smaller lots were turned away by members of the Planning and Zoning Commission on Monday. Betonbow Homes had requested a zone change from SF3, Single Family Dwelling District, to a PD, Planned District for a Housing Development, on a 27.05-acre tract in its Lone Star Trails 2 development at Occidental Parkway and Carriage Road. If approved, Edinburgh would have offered 121 residential lots and a common area on lots smaller than those required by the SF3 zoning, which is a minimum 5,500 square feet. 50 feet by 100 feet for interior lots, 55 feet by 100 for corner lots. Bettenbaugh would have offered 78 lots ranging from 37.14 to 45 feet, and depths ranging from 65 to 85 feet, and ranging from 4,145 to 5,192 square feet. Ronnie Wallace, land planner, and Chris Berry, land planning manager with Bettenbaugh, explained the request by telling commissioners the company wants to be able to offer smaller, more affordable homes, particularly in the face of climbing construction costs and housing prices. Berry told commissioners lumber prices are up about 10%. Wallace told commissioners the smaller houses are popular in other markets where they have been built and said at lower starting prices, roughly $189,000, they would be ideal starter homes or homes for young families, couples, or empty nesters. He pointed out the Lone Star 2 development has walking trails, playgrounds, and soccer fields, and includes the site of a future public school. Ultimately, the plan's lack of open space as called for in the Tall City Tomorrow plan, along with what planning staff deemed a lack of a diverse mix of housing sizes, failed to convince commissioners. The request failed on a 3-3 tie. Another housing development proposal, however, drew unanimous approval from commissioners. Shenandoah Bar M Ranch received approval for its zone change from AE, Agricultural Estate District, to SF3, Single Family Dwelling District, for its planned Shenandoah Ridge development. Shenandoah Ridge, located on 141.53 acres at the northeast corner of North State Highway 349 and at Occidental Parkway, will consist of 532 residential lots for single-family homes. Andrew Mellon, with Maverick Engineering, representing the developer, used the opportunity to tell commissioners that, given increasing construction costs, anything to promote smaller home sites would be beneficial. This is the local page. This article is entitled Coronavirus Cases, Positivity, Patients Drop, by Stuart Doreen. The number of confirmed COVID cases inside Midland County stayed in triple figures for the second straight week, hitting 100 after reaching 106 last week. The number of positive COVID-19 tests at Midland Health Testing Centers dropped by nearly one half week over week, falling from 60 to 31, which is tied for the lowest total since the week of March 20th, 27 cases that week. The positivity rate fell from 10.2% to 6%, according to Midland Health. The number of active COVID patients hospitalized inside Midland Memorial also fell from 9 to 7. Midland Health reported 1,556 vaccines were administered during the last week of the mass vaccination site at the Horseshoe Complex. The total marked a 33% decrease from the week before. Midland Health also showed the number of injections at the Horseshoe reached 65,681 during the pandemic. That is around 60% of all the vaccinations Midland Health administered or transferred to another health entity. This is the news page. This article is entitled MDC Board Approves New Executive Director by Mella McEwen. Members of the board of the Midland Development Corporation said goodbye to outgoing Executive Director John Trichetti III at Monday's monthly board meeting. Board members unanimously approved a resolution authorizing the separation and release agreement with Trichetti, who had served in the position since 2019 and will leave the MDC effective May 15th. At the same meeting, board members approved a resolution authorizing the employment agreement with Sarah Harris to serve as executive director beginning May 16th. She currently serves as MDC's director of operations. Board members offered their thanks to Trichetti for his service, noting that he had served during a difficult 18-month period economically for the MDC, the city, and indeed the country amid the COVID-19 pandemic. Lori Wesley, executive director of the Museum of the Southwest, made a presentation to board members about the museum, focused on the need to upgrade its parking lot, which not only serves the Art Museum, its Blakemore Planetarium and Freda Turner Durham Children's Museum, but the Haley Library and the Midland Downtown Farmers Market. "If you've been to the museum at all, you know we have a parking lot that you could lose a small child in," she said. "We have potholes that are literally 18 inches deep." MDC assistance with redoing and upgrading the parking lot would enhance the campus, allow the museum to make the parking lot more aesthetically pleasing with the addition of trees and improved lighting, Wesley told board members. It would also allow museum officials to better direct visitors to the museum entrances. The Haley Library has asked the City of Midland to close Indiana and L Streets by its location as it looks to develop a campus, she noted. Board members will consider the museum's request, and an item for board approval will be placed on the agenda at a later date. Board members also agreed to extend by a year an economic development agreement with Kepler Aerospace. Kepler is in the process of importing aircraft from the United Kingdom and Japan to be located in Midland. But that process has been impeded, if not halted, by the pandemic, Harris told board members. GJD Services acquired the airframe and two simulators of a ZA-150 that has been held at Dunsfold Aerodrome in the UK by the Brooklands Trust. Kepler upgrades and re-engineers the advanced aviation technologies to create highly efficient and economically viable satellite delivery systems. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, "Every Week We Should Appreciate Teachers," by Kristen Vasquez, MISD Homework. This time last year, we as a community were lavishing praise on teachers, constantly reminding them how much they are appreciated and loved, how important they are in our students' lives. I have noticed over the past year that this has slowly trickled away. There is a common theme in conversations I have with teachers almost daily, and that is morale is low. It's in the gutter. Some teachers have shared that they are considering finding a new profession or retiring early. Imagine what that could do to our community that already struggles academically. We spend 1 week a year telling teachers they are amazing, but what about all the weeks that aren't a part of Teacher Appreciation Week? How are we helping teachers, supporting them? What are we doing to make sure they understand the difference they have in our kids' lives? Even as adults, we can think back to our academic years and remember certain teachers that stand out. Certain teachers that made such a positive impact on our lives that we never forget them. We have teachers in our community that do that every day, and our children are becoming better people because of them. What can we do to make sure these teachers not only understand their worth, but continue to change lives each year? I personally think that we don't need to wait until the first week in May to show teachers they are loved. Start with developing a relationship with your child's teachers and ask them, "What can I do to help?" You can never go wrong with picking up an extra container of Clorox wipes, dropping off a favorite coffee, and the holy grail of gifts, a box of Ticonderoga number 2 pencils. Trust me, teachers love them. Maybe it's not feasible for you to buy them supplies. Time can be more precious than gifts. Now that campuses are slowly allowing visitors back in the buildings, offering to sort papers, make copies, laminating and cutting projects can make a huge difference. We all use the phrase, "it takes a village," and it's true. Be part of the village. More than acts of service and lavishing them with gifts, teachers deserve something else that is more crucial. Teachers deserve a voice in the decision-making about how we educate our children. They deserve to be a part of the discussions. They are the ones working every day with our students and know what works and what doesn't. We should not be making decisions about our district without their input. And not just a handful of teachers that know the right people or say the right things, but all the teachers. We can support teachers by asking our district and our board, how do the teachers feel about this? Every time a major decision needs to be made, Teachers deserve every single raise they have gotten, and my hope is the raises they will continue to receive. Teachers work hard all year. They work after hours and on weekends. Their summer consists of lesson planning and cleaning and decorating their classrooms, making sure any supplies they need have been purchased out of their own pocket. Any extra training is completed. Every summer, I see members of our own community criticize and mock teachers for their summer vacation. If you think it's such an easy, relaxing job, UTPB has an amazing student-teacher program that I'm certain you would enjoy thoroughly. I think the most important service we can provide for teachers is participation, specifically participating in our students' educational experience and communicating with our kids every day about respecting teachers. Communicate every week with your kids' teachers about what is happening that week in class so you can continue the conversations at home. I think watching my children learn and talking about things they have worked through are two of the most pleasant, rewarding things as a parent. Please don't wait until the end of the year to tell teachers they are amazing. Tell them consistently throughout the year. And not just teachers. Paraprofessionals, librarians, reading and math coaches, janitors, cafeteria workers, crossing guards. Think about the smile you would put on these faces by just saying thank you. Teachers, we hear you. We support you. We know you work tirelessly every day to enrich our kids' lives, and it is so appreciated. This year has been hard, harder than ever before. But we are here for you, and we value this week and the other 51 weeks of the year. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. Betty J. Tucker. Betty J. Tucker passed away on Friday, April 30th, 2021. She was the daughter of William S. and Pearl Taze. Betty was born September 4th, 1937, in Roswell, New Mexico. Betty was preceded in death by her husband, Bobby Tucker of Midland, daughter, Darren Lynn Tucker, parents, William and Pearl Taze, brother, George Donald Taze, brother, Raymond G. Taze, brother, Melvin E. Taze, brother, William S. Taze, Jr., and sister, Florine Gregg. Survivors include sister-in-law Joyce Taze and nephew Jackie Sawyer of Richmond, Texas, Don Walsh of Kerrville, niece Sue Taze of Albuquerque, New Mexico, brother-in-law Don Tucker and family of Federal Way, Washington. All-day viewing will be held on Wednesday, May 5th at Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home. Graveside service will be held at 2 p.m. Thursday, May 6th at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Geraldine Jerry Polster Pennick. Geraldine Jerry Polster Pennick, 93, of Midland, passed away peacefully on Friday, April 30th, surrounded by family. Jerry was born on November 30, 1927, on the family farm in Benjamin, Texas, to Walter A. and Bertha Jeske Polster. Jerry is survived by her husband of 70 years, David, and her daughter Margie Norton, husband Fred of Midland, son G. David Pennick and Paula Lednicki of Magnolia, daughter Melinda Ludecki, husband Pat of Belton. Her sisters, Irene Greenhaw of Midland and Carolyn Graham of Buna. 5 grandchildren, 8 great-grandchildren, 2 great-great-grandchildren, many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Jerry was preceded in death by her parents, Walter and Bertha Jeske Polster, brother Calvin W. Polster. The family will receive guests from 6 to 8 p.m. Tuesday, May 4th at Nally Pickle and Welch. Funeral service will be held at 2 p.m. Wednesday, May 5th at Grace Lutheran Church. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. A reception will be held in the community room immediately following the burial at Grace Lutheran Church. Memorials can be made to the Youth Fund or Bauman Scholarship Fund at Grace Lutheran Church. Arrangements are entrusted to Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Leon Ray Harter. Leon Ray Harter, 75, of Midland, passed away on April 28th at Midland Memorial Hospital in Midland. Leon was born on September 15, 1945, to Lawrence and Helen Gerber Harter in South Bend, Indiana. He is survived by two sons, Chad Michael Harter and Mark Jason Harter, three grandchildren, two brothers, Larry Harter, Ruth, and Alan Harter, Susan, four nephews, and one niece. He is preceded in death by his parents, Lawrence Harter and Helen Gerber Harter. Celebration of life will be Saturday, May 8th at 11 a.m. at American Heritage Funeral Home. Arrangements are entrusted to American Heritage Cemetery Funeral Home Crematory. Melvin Mel Dean Pearson. Melvin Mel Dean Pearson was born November 7, 1946, to John Melvin Pearson and Frieda Marie Mollick in Linz, Austria. He passed from this life into glory on April 29, 2021, after an eight-month battle with cancer. He was preceded in death by his parents and his father and mother-in-law, Bill and Margaret Bass. He is survived by his wife, Pam Pearson of Midland, son Michael and wife June and their children of Lubbock, Texas, Grant McMillan, Carson McMillan, Hunter McMillan, and Chloe Pearson of Frisco, Texas, son Mark and wife Dana and their children, Alex, Anna, and Megan of Liberty Hill, sister Mary and her husband Troy Willis of Cross Plains, Texas, brother John and wife Patty of Denison, Texas, brother-in-law Jim and wife Karen Bass of Midland, Texas, brother-in-law John and wife Joyce Bass of Flower Mound, Texas, sister-in-law Amanda and husband Jimmy Davis of Midland, numerous nieces, nephews, and extended family. Memorial service will be held at 2 p.m. Tuesday, May 4th at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Memorial donations may be made to St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, 501 St. Jude Place, Memphis, Tennessee, 38105. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Rodolfo Rudy Vasquez Ibarra. Rodolfo Rudy Vasquez Ibarra passed away on April 28th. Rosary will begin at 7 p.m. on Thursday, May 6th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Mass will begin at 11 a.m. Friday, May 7th at St. Stephen's Catholic Church. Rodolfo Rudy was born on June 28, 1946 in Alpine, Texas, to his parents Mateo and Udoviges Ibarra. He married Manuela Valero Garcia on June 28, 1969, in Alpine, Texas. Rudy is survived by his daughter Yvonne Tenorio and husband Rick, son Rudy Adrian Ibarra and wife Alexis, a great-nephew that he raised, Angel Valles, and Jasmine. Nine grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, brother Rene Ibarra and wife Alicia, and many nieces, nephews, and cousins. Rudy is preceded in death by his wife, Manuela G. Ibarra, parents, brother Ruben Ibarra, and sister Araceli Ibarra. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Winona Monette Riggs. Winona Monette Riggs, 80, of Fort Stockton, passed away on April 22nd, surrounded by her loving family. Winona was born on November 4, 1940, to William, Bill, and Evelyn Brown on the family farm near Orlando, Oklahoma. Winona is preceded in death by her parents, William, Bill Herbert Brown, and Evelyn Francis Brown, her beloved husband, Melvin Jean Riggs, and grandson, George Frazier Riggs. Winona is survived by her brother Max Brown and wife Rosie Salcedo Brown of the Woodlands, her five children, Mel Riggs Jr. and wife Marcia of Midland, George Riggs and wife Glenna of Fort Stockton, Wes Riggs of Euless, Connie Riggs Morrow and husband John of Midland, and Regina Riggs Frick and husband Luke of Plano. her 7 grandchildren, 2 great-grandchildren. Winona also leaves behind her Aunt Imogene Francis of Oklahoma, her precious neighbors and dear friends Donna and Gary Bryant of Fort Stockton. Services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, May 8th at East Hill Cemetery in Fort Stockton. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to either of the following organizations: PCMH Home Health and Hospice, 387 West Interstate Highway 10, Fort Stockton, Texas, 79735. Home Hospice, 808 West Missouri, Midland, Texas, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death Notices. Edward Armendariz Jr. Edward Armendariz Jr. passed away May 2, 2021. Visitation will be held Tuesday, May 4th from 1 to 9 p.m. A rosary will be recited at 7 p.m. at Stanton Memorial Funeral Home Chapel. Funeral Mass will be held at 11 a.m. Wednesday, May 5th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Interment will follow at St. Joseph's Catholic Cemetery. Survivors include his wife, Auralia Armendariz, son Donovan Armendariz, father Eduardo Armendariz, and 1 sister. Arrangements are entrusted to Stanton Memorial Funeral Home and Chapel. Jane Carolyn Wolfe. Jane Carolyn Wolfe of Midland passed away Friday, April 30th. Rosary service will be held at 7 p.m. on Wednesday, May 5th at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home Chapel. The funeral mass will be held at St. Anne's Catholic Church at 12 noon on Thursday, May 6th. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Arrangements. Survivors include daughter Barbara Jane Clark, Carolyn Ann Copeland, and Suzanne Marie McGinnis. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Joy D. Davis Moore, 84, of Midland, passed away on Friday, April 30th. The family will receive guests from 5 to 7 p.m. on Tuesday, May 4th, at Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home in Midland. Interment will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park on Wednesday, May 5th at 11 a.m. Survivors include sons Freddie Moore and Marvin Moore. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Kenneth Ken Jones. Kenneth Ken Jones, 63, of Midland, passed away on Friday, April 30th in Midland. Visitation will be 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday, May 6th at Willowbrook Funeral Home in Midland. To place online condolences, please visit www.willowbrk.com. Arrangements are entrusted to Willowbrook Funeral Home and Cremation Services of Midland. Lloyd Stratton. Lloyd Stratton, 74, of Midland, passed away April 30th. There is no service planned at this time. Survivors include daughter Pamela Schlegel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nallie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Sandra Woodson, 70, of Midland, passed away on Wednesday, April 26th. Viewing will be Monday, May 3rd, from 2 to 8 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. Funeral service is set for Tuesday, May 4th at 10 a.m. at New Jerusalem Baptist Church. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens. She is survived by her 2 sons, Corey Green and Terrence Green, 1 brother, Clarence Whitten, 1 sister, Beatrice Hawker, and 6 grandchildren.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 4th, 2021. Council Addressing Memorial Gardens Erosion by Federico Martinez, FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. Odessa City Council will address erosion concerns at Memorial Gardens during a virtual work session scheduled for 3 p.m. today. Council will reconvene on Friday for a special meeting to interview applicants for the position of Associate Municipal Court Judge. During today's work session, Council will consider hiring a Midland-based company for $105,000 to oversee an erosion control project at Memorial Gardens. The work session agenda details. Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton and his staff are recommending Council hire Onyx Contractors, LLC of Midland for $105,000. A second bidder, Hawkins Construction of Odessa, bid $109,552 to complete the job. The city originally estimated the project would cost $282,629. Patton said the project would address a problem with the drainage culvert under 42nd Street that enters Memorial Gardens near the northwest corner of the park site. The swift current flowing through the culvert into the holding pond area has eroded the soil around the footings of the west pedestrian bridge, Patton explained. The project would encase the bridge footings with a concrete wall and protect the footings from further erosion. The agenda also includes several routine items for Council to consider, which include listening to annual reports by Discover Odessa and Keep Odessa Beautiful, approve award of bank depository agreement. City administrators are recommending retaining BBVA USA for $69,328. Consider bid award for replacement of red metal roofs on pavilions and restroom building at Woodson Park and pavilion at Floyd Gwynn Park at a total cost of $43,835. City Council has scheduled a 1:30 p.m. Friday special meeting to interview applicants for the position of Associate Municipal Court Judge. Friday's special meeting will be held in Council Chambers, City Hall, 411 West 8th Street. Half of Texans still unvaccinated. Texas shifts COVID-19 vaccination strategies. Karen Brooks Harper, The Texas Tribune. At its peak, the mass COVID-19 vaccination site at the Kelly Reeves Athletic Complex in Williamson County was administering about 4,000 doses per day. Now it's half that. County health officials will close the North Austin drive-through hub in mid-May, shifting the responsibility to a growing number of doctors, pharmacies, public health offices, and other smaller providers who have closer relationships with and easier access to the county's estimated 200,000 eligible residents who haven't yet gotten vaccinated. "We're still moving along," said Jen Stratton, Director of Communications for Family Hospital Systems in Williamson County, which partners with the county to run the hub. "Our focus is just changing. It's part of a new approach by health officials across the state to get vaccines moving again as Texas confronts the next chapter in its massive vaccine rollout. Its first dip in demand and glut in supply since vaccinations began last winter." On Friday, Texas health officials sent letters to the state's nearly 8,000 registered vaccine providers that some 280,000 doses would be coming into the state's warehouse next week and are up for grabs. Starting this week, the state will start asking the federal government only for doses that providers have ordered, as opposed to asking for as much as they can get, an agency spokesperson said. "I encourage you to consider what you can do to make one more big push to quickly vaccinate those who are willing," read a letter from the Texas Department of State Health Services Commissioner John Hellerstedt to vaccine providers on Friday. "This is our path out of the pandemic and back to normal lives. Both state and local health officials predicted months ago that the tables would eventually turn from not enough supply to more than enough. It happened with H1N1, the swine flu pandemic of 2009-2010, too, as it happens in all of these types of events, said Dr. David Lakey, Vice Chancellor for Health Affairs and a Chief Medical Officer at the University of Texas System and a member of the state's expert vaccine allocation panel. Early on, there is so much more demand than there is supply, and then it quickly tips in the other direction, where supply exceeds demand. So the state right now has a lot of vaccine in freezers, and other providers have vaccines in freezers that they're trying to get out to individuals. Just over a third of the state's 22 million eligible Texans, people 16 years and older, are already fully vaccinated against the virus that has killed almost 50,000 in Texas in the past year, while just under 50% have received one dose. The earliest among those recipients lined up in hours-long queues added their names to months-long online waiting lists and buzzed distribution sites at the end of the day, hoping for a chance to receive unused doses as demand far outstripped supply. The state's effort to reach the ones still out there, the hesitant, the unaware, the inconvenienced, and the overworked, among the 12 million as yet unvaccinated eligible Texans, includes trucks driving through small rural towns with LED signs, a $1.5 million TV and digital ad campaign, and a truck with a large video screen stopping at Walmart parking lots in 22 Texas cities, playing 5-minute loops customized for each stop with ads, local leaders encouraging residents to get vaccinated, and testimonials pulled from social media. Locals are also brainstorming ways to lure in people with gifts. Harris County may offer bobbleheads of baseball star Jose Altuve of the Houston Astros and encouraging private companies to donate gift cards as incentives. They're sending out emergency cell phone alerts, touting the vaccine on digital freeway traffic signs, running pop-up vaccine clinics in workplace break rooms, and hanging sign-up sheets at the back of churches during Sunday services. The messaging and the shift to smaller providers is the natural next step, state health officials said, in the next phase of the campaign to drive demand for the vaccine. Our research shows that individual health care providers are the most trusted voices for people deciding whether to get vaccinated, Hillerstadt said. Over the coming weeks, we will continue to share messages encouraging various communities to get vaccinated. We are also relying on trusted voices within those communities to speak up and let their neighbors know that these COVID-19 vaccines are safe, effective, and the best way to end the pandemic and restore normalcy. The new messaging push is made possible by the fact that Texas is now getting 3 times more vaccine every week than it was in January, when officials were hesitant to encourage a lot of demand for a vaccine they didn't have. It's also made necessary by the fact that many of these Texans have to be found, convinced, and then vaccinated on their terms, like he said. It's going to be a harder process to get the next group of individuals immunized, like he said. The ones that were really anxious to get vaccinated, I think, have been immunized at this point. On the local level, officials are closing hubs in some places, like Lubbock, while allowing walk-ins and extending hours in others, like Harris County, which saw an uptick in recipients at its NRG Park site after staying open until 9 p.m. over the weekend. In Williamson County, the county reduced its waiting list from more than 200,000 in January to about 1/10 of that, and then shut it down 2 weeks ago after only 5% of the remaining names on the list were showing up for appointments. County Judge Bill Gravel urged residents to talk to their doctors if they want to get the shot, and predicted herd immunity in the county by the end of May. Bronco Legacy Choir. Photos by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Odessa High School Bronco Legacy's Zach Marquez Center and Victoria Carrillo, 16, rehearsed their choreography for their spring show titled Good Vibrations Tuesday in the lobby of the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. Good Vibrations coming from Bronco Legacy by Ruth Campbell, R-C-A-M-P-B-E-L-L at OAOA.com. Odessa High School Bronco Legacy seniors Noah Byford, 18, center left, and Chloe Aranda, 17, rehearsed their choreography for their spring show titled Good Vibrations Tuesday in the lobby of the Odessa High School Performing Arts Center. Odessa High School's Bronco Legacy Choir will be putting out some Good Vibrations for its spring show set for May 14 and 15 at the OHS Performing Arts Center. Head Choir Director Ginger Story said the theme was the idea of Associate Director Rob Rogers. He wanted to sing that song, and it's kind of worked. And honestly, I think after a year like this one, the thought of being somewhere else is kind of nice. To get away, go on a vacation, Story said. Tickets are $15 for the prime seating, which is the center section, $10 for all other seats for adults, and $5 for students and children. To get tickets, visit ohschoir.ludus.com. Story said the show will include singing, dancing, and skits. It should be a fun show, she added. The group of 14 performers has been working on the event since January. Several other students are working behind the scenes. With more students coming back to campus in the spring, it has been easier to work with the performers. We tell them, you've got to be here. You can't do this online, virtually. So these kids have been pretty consistent in coming to school every day. Even our students that are remote for their other classes are still coming to this class, and I think that has made it much easier to prepare and to plan, Story said. She added that the show is going to be great. They're a great group of kids. We've enjoyed them, and they've been a lot of fun. They've got a great attitude, and they've got a good work ethic. They work hard, and after we were so successful at our UIL a couple of weeks ago, I think they're even more fired up, Story said. She noted that they had 3 all-state musicians this year and 13 or 14 qualified for solo and ensemble competition. We just had our UIL concert site reading evaluation 2 weeks ago, and all 4 choirs came up with a sweepstakes. So we feel like we've had a very successful year considering all things. And I think the kids needed it, Story said. She added that she hopes the choir's success will attract students for next year. We've had pretty good success with attendance. We have lost some kids this year just for different reasons. Maybe they didn't want to have to participate. Maybe because they're all virtual. We've had different things happen. I think for the most part, it seems like the kids are here and they're a part of the program, and they want to be a part of the program. I think what is really going to be hard is seeing what we get coming up from the middle schools, because the middle schools have been hit a little bit harder than we have, just because those kids can't drive, so it's not like they can come just to choir. Some of them were able to do that, but not all of them. Most of them were either all virtual or all in person. We're in a different position because a lot of our kids drive, and they're able to come just for this class and then go back and do the rest of their classes at home, Story said. 18-year-old senior Noah Byford said, this year has been rough because of COVID. He said the show was going to be an upbeat experience because he will get to sing in front of people again. But it's going to be a bittersweet moment because it's my last one. It's going to be kind of sad for me, Byford said. He added that he's happy to be graduating and getting out of here. Byford said he plans to study physical therapy at Texas Tech University. Ariana Franco is a 17-year-old senior. I'm very, very excited. We've definitely worked our tails off for the show, considering last year's show got canceled. And we were really good with preparation for that. We're just happy that this year we're having an opportunity to put on a show for people to come and watch, Franco said. Franco agreed with Byford that this is a time that is both happy and sad. COVID-19 changed a lot of what they would normally do. So we definitely, as seniors, lost a lot of opportunities. But when it comes down to it, we're given this awesome opportunity to perform one last time, so I think it's pretty great. We definitely won't take it for granted, and we'll put on a really good show, Franco said. She added that she is ready to graduate. I feel not only is that a huge accomplishment for me, it's a huge accomplishment to all my teachers who have helped me, my parents especially. Of course, I didn't get here on my own. I'm very excited for what the future holds for me, considering that I am going after my doctorate in music theory. So I'm very excited. She plans to attend University of Texas Permian Basin, where she expects to join the choir. Ashton Ontiveros, a 17-year-old senior, said the Bronco Legacy show will be amazing. He is undecided on where he is going to college. We've been working really hard for the past couple of months, and I believe that we are going to do fantastic, Ontiveros said. He added that he is going to miss every second of it, even the being yelled at part for being a chatterbox. But I also think it's going to be great for the underclassmen to step up after all the seniors are gone, because they're really good too. And it's so amazing to hear them and to think about the future of Bronco Legacy, Ontiveros said. On the net, www.odessahschoir.com.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.